Previously on X-Men.
Welcome, dear listeners, to a realm where ordinary becomes extraordinary, where the misunderstood become heroes, and where unity conquers adversity. This is the world of mutants, the world of the X-Men. Join us as we delve deep into the stories that have captured the hearts and minds of generations. From the gripping battles of the animated series to the live-action films, this is Exposition, an X-Men podcast. Excelsior!
Oh, welcome to Exposition, an X-Men podcast. My name is Jennifer Smith. I'm here with my wonderful co-host, Tim Cable. How are you, Tim?
I am pretty awesome, Jennifer Smith. Yeah, welcome to Magneto's Mutant Cave Rave Party. If you're just joining us, we have a good time here.
We do. And
welcome back if you're a returning listener. So this is a big week, Jenny, because as of the time of this here recording, I mean, by the time folks hear it, it'll be old news, but we are on the eve of the premiere of the new / continuing series, X-Men 97.
How are you feeling on that? Look, I
am just a bundle of emotions, kind of a bundle of nerves, to be honest.
Same.
I think we're getting two episodes on the 20th. I think they're going to show the first two, is what I'm hearing.
Oh, okay, good. Maybe a two-parter. Like a classic.
I want to say the first three episodes seem to be interconnected, but it seems like this whole first season is going to be, you know, just as its predecessor, following a unified theme or arc, as it will. It's one of those things where I'm like looking forward to it, but at the same time, I'm like, there was that announcement like just about a week ago that Disney let go of the showrunner, and it wasn't exactly phrased as a mutual parting of the ways, right? It was like this guy got fired. Bo DiMaio was his name. And it's just really strange to me that you would want that dominating your headlines going into
the premiere,
the much hyped, much anticipated premiere of this new series, right? It's the type of thing, you know, under normal circumstances, even if you didn't like the guy and decided to can his ass, you would kind of keep that under wraps until, I don't know, a few weeks into the show, right? Just why would you lead off with
why
that?
Yeah, what did he do? It's my question.
What did he do? It makes me think they're trying to get ahead of something.
Yeah, it does seem
I don't know what that something could be, because from all indications I've talked to and read some kind of advanced reviews from people who are fortunate enough to see the kind of early premiere last week, private screening, of course, and honestly, pretty overwhelmingly positive.
Oh, well, that's
as
great.
As far as the show itself, yeah, they seem to like what they're seeing. So
maybe a personal issue then.
Yeah, I don't know that it's a reflection on the content or quality of the show itself.
Can't be.
I would hope not. Yeah. Look, Jenny, I can't take another L as far as.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
As far as this fucking X-Men superhero Disney Plus content, I don't care if it's a movie, a TV show, an anime, I can't take another L. I'm done with. I can't take even just a meh. I need a win.
We need
a
win.
Serious win that makes me, like, I don't know, a little bit excited about waking up in the morning to watch this thing, you know?
I completely agree with you.
Which I am right now. I'm very excited.
Yeah,
to
me too. I am.
Watch it at the first possible opportunity. I don't know what time it's going to be made available, but I'm going to be looking for it all day, I feel like.
And it's something that maybe we could, you know, kind of touch on as the series goes and as we record these episodes, kind of give our thoughts a little bit, you know. Yeah. We got a while to go before we make it to, you know.
We do. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and if it truly is a continuation, I suppose we should cover those episodes in that series at some point. But
you think so? I mean,
we're some ways off from that right now.
We are all like halfway through season one, so that's not
that
bad.
Is right. Yep. Yep. So picking up at about that halfway point, where are we exactly? So we talked. Well, our last episode was a special where we talked the first movie, right? Mm-hmm. Which that was a lot of fun with Keith. Just you and I tonight.
Yeah, and nobody in the gallery tonight. Everybody's busy.
Nobody in the gallery. That's okay. Everybody's too busy, I guess, to talk about X-Men.
With their X-Men baseball week. Drafts and their...
Mm-hmm. Their games other podcasts.
Of some sort. Yeah.
Like other podcast matter this week.
Or
anyway.
They're just fucking themselves. I don't know.
Or they just have, decided to go fuck themselves. But we're getting back to the show proper. And our next episode that we'll be talking about, pair of episodes tonight, actually. So special treat for you listeners. We've got from season one, episode 6, Cold Vengeance. And that originally aired on February 6th, 1993. So kind of a Wolverine solo outing. Mm-hmm. We pick up, though, immediately where we left off after the Morlock adventure. Cyclops and Jean going to thank Wolverine for his assistance during that whole ordeal. I guess maybe to give him another portrait as well, since he defaced the one that he had whilst furiously masturbating in sexual frustration. As you do.
As you do. All right. Yeah.
Who among us has it? But Wolverine has flown the coop. He's nowhere to be found. Cyclops like immediately flies off at the handle at this
point. Yeah, he gets so
anybody
pissed.
Who'd run out on his friends is just like Wolverine. He can't be counted on. It's like, whoa, chill. Let's take it down a notch.
No, he said fuck that guy for real.
Yeah. He hate really is did. Real. Which part of me I kind of get, because for as much as Wolverine is all about loyalty to the team, you know, we're all in it together. You can't leave anybody behind. He's just going to run out whenever
he wants. Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm.
So he kind of holds himself to a different standard of behavior here. So Cyclops takes it super personal. Says anytime he doesn't get his way, this is how he acts. They can never depend on him. Jean hits him with a Cyclops, which feels very like we're still not totally using real names in this series yet.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, every now and then they'll say it, but we still have to establish like these are superheroes, these are their superhero names. But she, you know, quietly admits to herself that Wolverine left because of her.
Mm-hmm.
Once Scott is out of earshot, of course. So we're going to pull up on Wolverine. He is somewhere, seems to be near the Arctic Circle, the North Pole, I gather. Maybe the Canadian tundra. I don't know. It's never really said where he is. He is from Canada.
Some glacier, because he said that during the episode that they're on a glacier.
Does. They are on a glacier, yeah. So somewhere in, you know.
And he's skiing.
He is skiing, yeah.
That's amazing.
He also does say at one point, there's no place like home. So again, this sort of makes me think Canada, although Canada is an enormous country. So
yes, it could very well be Canada.
Anyway, but there is an explosion triggered by Sabretooth, of all people, who is now making his return mm-hmm. to the series after being chased off in episode 4, when he turned on the team, jubilee blasted him through the mansion wall in a pretty memorable scene.
Did. Yeah.
And so Wolverine gets blasted here right out of his skis, which I feel like this version of Wolverine make a fine action figure. I don't think they ever,
I would agree.
I don't think they ever did like Arctic glacier inline skiing, you know, Wolverine.
Yeah, but yeah, that would be a deep cut.
Snowshoes Wolverine. Anyway.
And later fishermen.
The later Fisherman Wolverine. Yeah, a lot of good looks in this episode. Yeah. But Sabretooth, he's been tracking Wolverine, looks to finish him off, thinks he can do it now without the X-Men's interference, of course. Leads to a very brief, notably bloodless skirmish between these two, because it is a children's cartoon, which is always what's so frustrating to me whenever Sabretooth does show up on this. You're never going to get the kind of Wolverine and Sabretooth fight that you want to see. You're just not in a deal
this
like
this. This one's kind of silly too.
This one is kind of silly. Because they're brought to like the edge of a cliff, maybe that aforementioned glacier, and you know, an ice sheath sort of gives way and it dumps Wolverine into the very frigid waters below. So Wolverine is floating away on this chunk of ice as Sabretooth stands above him, gloating.
Yeah, he screams and yells at him. Yeah, I was going to ask you how you felt about the voice.
I liked Sabretooth's voice actor. Not sure. I didn't make a note of who this is. I think he voices various characters throughout the series. It might, I don't want to say it's the same voice as Cable and get that wrong, but I do feel like he does double duty like a few times. Kind of sounds like, maybe this is just the wrestling mark in me. He kind of seems like, or sounds like Sid Vicious to me.
A little bit, yeah. I can see
the way he sort of cuts these promos, right? So I appreciate that aspect. But anyway, back at the mansion, there is a fight nearly breaking out in the war room, Jenny. There's no fighting in the war room, as we know.
Can't have that.
No. Cyclops is accusing Gambit of spreading unfounded rumors. Cyclops has got a real stick up his ass this episode.
Well, I mean, that's just kind of how he is.
In this series in general, but I mean, he's really having a rough go of it, I think, here in this.
He gets his little one-liners album. In, too, though.
He does.
Yeah, he's a little bitch sometimes.
He is. He's pretty bitchy, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, at the end of the day.
Well, shut the fuck up, dude. Which we're not even Gambit sure. pretty much says.
Right. Right. Well, and the thing is, though, like, I hate to be that guy, but we do get to our second. We're not sure what they're arguing about just yet, but when we get to our next episode, it's going to turn out Cyclops was totally right. He just
that's besides the point. He didn't realize it. It's not from wisdom.
He didn't know it.
He was accidentally right.
Yeah, he's just being an asshole here.
Yeah.
So he tells Gambit he's spreading rumors. Gambit denies it. And he says he's got it on good authority. He knows somebody that has been to this island nation called Genosha, and it's a safe haven for mutants. He wants to check it out. Wants to go investigate.
Why not, dude?
Yeah, and here's where Cyclops gets a little bitchy. He's like essentially accusing him of just wanting an excuse to lay around on the beach, trying to, you know, get out of real X-Men business, I guess. So,
well, what they got going on right now?
They could
chill for a hot minute.
It does seem like they have some downtime here. I mean, Magneto's not attacking anyone. There's no Sentinels. Wolverine's missing, but that's just Wolverine being Wolverine. So, in any case, Professor X now enters the room. What's the meaning of this? And he says that, you know, maybe a vacation, in fact, isn't such a bad idea. So, Professor X playing the good cop to Cyclops' bad cop here. But more importantly, the possibilities, you know, of this island nation paradise for mutants, just too opportunistic for the team to ignore, especially if what Gambit is saying is true. They owe it to themselves and to the mutant community to check it out. And Cyclops then selects an away team. And Professor X essentially orders him to chill the fuck out. So, needless to say, he will not be part of that away team. But
calm your tits. I'm sending everybody but you to the beach, you dumb bitch. Much.
Yeah, so we're going to have Storm, Gambit, and a pretty enthusiastic Jubilee going undercover here to Genosha. And Cyclops tells him, you know, just act like tourists, but you got to be gathering intel the whole time. Right? Still a mission.
Everybody's like, no shit, Cyclops. We just said that. Like,
this is all we were trying to do.
Of course we're going to be incognito. Like,
yeah. So anyway, that is settled for now. But back in the Arctic, I guess, we have a badly weakened, injured Wolverine being pulled from the water by a passing group of Inuit villagers, and they take him back to their base camp, I guess. Wolverine wakes up. He's greeted by a character called Puyeta.
Puyeta.
Who is like, yeah, the elder of this village. He's really astonished, though, by Wolverine's recovery. He just, you know, springs right back to action for the most part. And Wolverine just flat out tells him, well, you know, I'm a mutant.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that, like, these people have no concept of whatsoever. They're like, do what?
They're like, what's that?
And so Wolverine's like, yeah, don't worry about it. which they seem to abide. And he just decides to make himself useful, joins these villagers on like a fishing excursion. So once again, his skill and mutant physique are allowing him to really excel at all these laborious, you know, daily tasks of that are required to maintain this village. But we do have an angry young man, because there's always an angry young man, right?
Of course. Jealous young man.
Strangers, yes. And that is a character named Kiowek, who is taking exception to Wolverine in his presence there, pretty much just showing everybody up, right, without even mm-hmm. meaning to. It's kind of like that deal where you ever have a situation in life where you feel like you're winning a race against somebody without even knowing that you're
in the race. Yeah.
And they just resent you. They just resent your very existence for it. And you're like,
haters.
And it's like,
yeah,
nothing personal at all. You're not even trying to compete with them, but you're, and that's what makes it even more infuriating, mm-hmm. I'm sure, that you're not even trying, and you're dusting your ass. So, yeah. And that's what's going on here. Because, I mean, Wolverine, his contributions here, it rewards these villagers with their biggest haul of fish in quite some time, they say. It's like the old days, right? So, look at that.
And then he just picks up these giant baskets and totes them around.
Yeah. He's like, what do you want?
I mean, he's just helping, you know? He's not mm-hmm. being helping a show-off or anything.
No, he's not trying. That's the thing. He's not trying to show off. He's really trying to make himself useful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he is sort of, I think, delighting and feeling like he is being put to good use and making a
contribution. He's enjoying it, yeah.
He's enjoying it. Like, this seems to suit him, this mm-hmm. lifestyle. Because the mood is, like, really celebratory. And everybody's very welcoming towards Wolverine, except for the one aforementioned angry young man. Wolverine tells Puyeta that he finally feels at peace amongst his people, but he isn't really ready to disclose all. I mean, about his very secretive and dark past, but, you know, we just got there. There's time for all this. However, a very resentful Kiowek stalks off alone. He's brooding, and he comes face to face, wouldn't you know, with mm-hmm. Sabretooth. And Sabretooth is just going to waste this guy, basically. Like, he's
why
this
not? What he I'm does. Surprised he didn't, yeah. honestly.
Yeah, it seems like he's going in for it. Thinks that, you know, Kiowek is a friend of Wolverine's because he has his scent on him, of course, right? But Kiowek smartens Sabretooth up, says, you know, Wolverine's no friend of mine. And basically says, you know, hey, look, let me live and I'll take you to him, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have to catch up with Storm, Gambit, and Jubilee, who have arrived in Genosha. I'm not sure how undercover they are.
Had that note, because, like, could you look more like mutants? Are you a right. bunch of freaks? Like,
yeah.
Storm, I mean, is the only one who looks sort of normal.
She at least changed her clothes, yes.
Yes.
She looks appropriately like a beach grandma, I suppose. But she does still stand out in a crowd on account of the fact that she is Storm. You know, she's not covering her very distinctive hair, changing that in any way. God bless her for it. But I mean, Gambit is still there, and his you know, metal boots, trench coat, and
showing up
body armor. Yes.
Showing up at the Genosha Beach Inn in your
the
fucking
Genosha Beach Inn. Yes.
In your fucking trench coat. Like, what are you doing?
Jubilee as well with her, you know, yellow raincoat, whatever that's supposed to be. I mean, it's essentially her costume as well. So, all right. Yep. We're dressed for the beach. Definitely aren't X-Men. Nope. You know, we're just, you know,
la la la.
Yeah. We are mutants. It's they've even got a sign at the registration desk. It says to ask about our mutant discount, right?
That's clever. That was a really clever touch, I thought. Yeah. For the, you know, nefarious means that start going on around on Genosha.
Like a honeypot, right?
Basically.
And I mean, Gambit does actually start to inquire, and Storm just like put it back.
We're incognito, motherfucker.
Well, all I can say is they better fucking hope that place is friendly to mutants, because if these three aren't mutants, I don't know. I don't know what a mutant is. So they're going to be basically shown to their bungalow, but the desk clerk. I mean, as we were saying, clock Storm immediately from just some news footage, I guess. And he then alerts a superior, I suppose, to their presence on the island.
He pulls out a red phone, like a special
phone. He sure does. He has a red phone, yep, which...
it's never good if you have a red phone.
No,
nothing good ever happens on a red phone call.
Nothing good gonna come of that. Yeah. All right. So now Kiowek we're back with Wolverine on his adventure. Kiowek is taunting Wolverine. He lures him away from the village. They're in a kayak. That sort of just, you know, hey, be a good sport. Why don't we really see what you're made of, kind of thing. But Wolverine's on to him, like, right away. He's like, all right, why did you drag me all the way out here? But before Kiowek can really spill the beans, there is an explosion back at the camp. Oh, shit. Now they have to, you know, go all the way back. Who knows what is ensuing in their absence. The village is, of course, devastated. Sabretooth has pretty much just, you know, shown them both up. Sent them off on their own way and wrecked this village. Wolverine is, of course, blaming himself, very tormented now. But Kiowek confesses that Sabretooth double-crossed him. You know, he does tell Wolverine that, yes, the plan was to lure you away into a trap, but I didn't think he was going to attack the village. And Wolverine is pissed, right? He's about to take his anger out on this dude, which is probably something he would have done in his, shall we say, less enlightened past. But Wolverine is a hero now, so he's gonna save it for Sabretooth. And as night falls, Wolverine goes to confront his old enemy. He's joined by Kiowek, who is looking to make amends, but Sabretooth reveals he's got a whole bunch of villagers that are being held hostage. They're strapped to bombs, and he's going to straight up blow them up. Tells Wolverine he's got a minute to save them. Wolverine is pleading to Sabretooth that he doesn't want to fight anymore. He's done with their feud, whatever it meant, whatever it mattered. He's just over it, and it's time to bury it. Let's bury this thing. Sabretooth is all, fuck all that. And they throw down once again. Again, another, you know, bloodless fight.
Yeah.
Looks like Sabretooth pretty much has got the upper hand here. But Kiowek distracts Sabretooth just long enough for Wolverine to outmaneuver him. Throws Sabretooth into a deep chasm. So that's it for Sabretooth, right? He's dead. Never going to be seen again.
Nope.
But the two of them,
that works.
That's how that always works in these shows. The pair then go on to rescue the villagers just in the nick of time, of course. Excuse me. But Wolverine is pretty much taking responsibility for what happened here. You know, he feels like it's his fault that Sabretooth, went after this village. They're basically just collateral damage as a consequence of this feud between the two of them. He offers to rebuild the wrecked village, but Puyeta just thanks him, declares that his people are moving on. You know, they've been pressured to do so for a long time, and this is maybe the last straw. That he doesn't say where they're going or what they're going to do, but that's it for them and this village, apparently. So kind of end that on a somber note.
A little bit. But at least they were safe. They didn't die, so there's that.
They didn't die. There is that. Yeah, they didn't get blown up or freeze to death or anything, so... every cloud, I guess. But we got to get back to Genosha, of course. Jubilee is feeling jubilant. She's, changed into costume now herself. Even though they are in their bungalow, fully checked in, like on the beach, I suppose. But I can't get over some of the looks with these three.
Me too.
Their bungalow is then flooded with, I suppose, tear gas, and they have to make a break for it. But they are greeted by a small army outside. And Storm is cautioning Gambit, don't endanger the humans. Kind of their usual line, right?
Mm-hmm. I like how she has to immediately remind him of that.
Yeah.
Right at the beginning of the fight. Don't hurt the humans.
Now, remember, we can't kill anybody, but he sort of goes into business for himself, I feel like.
Well, as he does.
Yeah, so he's going at it. Storm is clearing the battlefield with like a big gust of wind, so they're holding their own pretty well. But wouldn't you know it, look who's back. Lasso and all, Jenny.
Oh, shit.
It's a Sentinel.
Not them. I thought we killed them all.
Yep. So he has that that coil, that signature lasso maneuver that just scoops them right up, and we cut to be continued.
Wow. I guess Gambit was wrong about Genosha. Huh.
I guess he was dead fucking wrong about Genosha. They seem, I don't know, kind of hostile.
Yeah.
I don't think this is
safe at all.
Yeah, to the point of having full-blown Sentinels, right? Mm-hmm. So that's not cool. Let's just get into talking about thoughts and feelings, Jenny. I've always been pretty blah on this episode. It's probably, I think, I don't know that it's actually the weakest of the first season, but it's probably my least favorite of the first season. Admittedly, that's a lot of that comes from me not being a big Wolverine guy, and this is a very Wolverine centric episode.
I was gonna say that.
But I would like it a lot more if they could, if he and Sabretooth could really throw down and
yes,
slicing and dicing. I mean, that, come on, give me something. But as it stands, not super into that in the first place, and it doesn't even like deliver on the appeal of a big Wolverine Sabretooth knockdown drag out fight. So
I like the concept. It's just so rushed. I mean, you only got 20 minutes on these episodes, right? So you're doing like rushed concepts anyway. But I like the idea of Wolverine fucking off and then just coming across this, settlement and helping them out and feeling peace, because it seems like all the times I've seen Wolverine in a peaceful life across, all the movies and everything, it's when he's doing something simple and he's, off by himself in the woods, or, this seems to suit him. And in every iteration of him, I've seen that. where he finds something that's comfortable, but it's never going to last because he is who
it
he
always,
is.
It always ends tragically, right?
Right.
And so, that's a much more interesting thread to pull on, I agree, than just the, like, there is something to, if you had just done maybe a Wolverine and Sabretooth doing like a cat and mouse game kind of thing. But I think to this show's credit, they do want to keep that focus on human mutant relations as much as possible.
Yeah.
So even in a Wolverine, what is largely a Wolverine solo outing, we've got to get some of that. Okay. Through the context of Wolverine's experience, as you said, finding peace, finding a life that really suits him, and largely, you know, this place of great solitude, he still is having these social interactions, and we've got to define what does that mean in terms of him being a mutant, and how he relates to that community. So they do keep the focus on that, which I think is wise, because that's, we're only in our, you know, what, sixth episode now, and that's really been the through line of this series so far. Is as much as we do, you know, our hero mutants fighting evil mutants, it's always through that lens of, but what does this mean for human mutant dynamics, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And these people had never even heard of mutants, so
yeah.
That was an interesting little.
And didn't particularly care what it.
Right. Meant, right? Yeah. No. Yeah. It was helpful to their village when they knew a mutant. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for me, I would think they would have good connotations of mutants, but they've also experienced Sabretooth. So
yes,
they know that not every mutant is good, but not every mutant is bad.
And the only way that Wolverine being a mutant presents any sort of conflict is really just through the one guy and his personal issue where he feels like, and it's not because, oh, this mutant is showing me up. It's just this guy is better than me. Right?
And that's,
and again, it's basic without trying.
Jealousy. Yeah. That basic jealousy that humans would have of mutants. Really?
Yes.
You know,
yep.
Tapping into some of that. I just thought it was an interesting episode. Like, it felt like very much this fight is between I don't believe Sabretooth's dead, and that this felt like just another step in their story. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Doesn't feel like a final conflict by any means, right?
And then the Genosha stuff just seemed like an obvious trap, and I'm like, y'all dumb.
Yeah. I'm sort of more interested in that subplot just because there's just a lot more to unpack with Genosha, but I do think the way it's executed, at least in these early goings, is a little bit janky. I mean, we joked about the choice of wardrobe and some of the decisions are like, as you put it, I think that's a byproduct of just having to be a little bit rushed.
Right.
We got to move this along. We got to get there. Realistically, we should probably devote a couple of episodes to this, but it's like, it's a subplot in this one and then boom, resolved in the next one.
Right.
So we'll talk more on that. I will say Wolverine comes off a little bit like an incel, running away from home because he can't deal with his feelings for a girl.
Well,
right?
That's true.
I mean, he runs all the way to the fucking Arctic Circle.
But why would you want to be around, you know, your crush and her boyfriend? Like, fuck that. I would fucking leave too. Like, no.
Yeah. It's just like,
I want to be on this team, but I need to fuck off for a minute because maybe he wants to deal with that. Maybe put it behind him or whatever. He try to figure out some way to be okay with that shit, or he just saying fuck it, I'm out. But it seemed like he had unfinished business with them, so I didn't believe he was like leaving. He's just doing one of his Irish exits
Canadian exit. It strikes me as an unheroic thing to do, but that's what sets his character.
And
it's what sets this show apart from other just traditional superhero fare, right? So it might be a bad look for him, but hey, the show leans into it. It's nothing if not authentic to the character. But yeah, and again, we get another cliffhanger. We have not, I think, even yet had much in the way of resolution.
I don't think so.
Episode to episode. Maybe, yeah, maybe after those first, you know, our first two, but really that's just an intro. At the end of the Magneto two-parter, it's like, well, we established Magneto is still out there. The Morlock adventure led mm-hmm. right into this one, and now we're like, oh shit, half the team has been captured by these Genosian slavers, so this is a real problem. And that's what's going to lead us to episode 7, which is straight up titled Slave Island. Jenny,
very captivating name.
Yeah, pretty arresting. Yeah,
yeah.
Look at us.
We're as bad as Matty Sue's.
He's rubbing off on it.
He is.
We got to get him back on, right?
Yeah, we do.
So this picks up just a week later. Oh God, I popped myself. This picks up just a week later on the 13th of February, 1993. And so starting off, the mutant prisoners of Genosha, they are unceremoniously awakened by this blaring alarm and kind of tell me if you got sort of the same sense of this that I did, just over the loudspeaker, this like voice that you get the sense is probably pretty obnoxious to hear throughout the day. Kind of seemed sort of Jim Jones-esque to me.
Oh, yes. Very Jim Jones.
Like, and I don't think it's not that they're going for like a Jonestown feel. Like, this isn't cultish or anything.
No,
I just feel like,
but yeah,
that aspect of it is very like he's, you know, saying these things that are very soothing and like it's couched in a lot of, oh, you're being so helpful, this is all for the greater good. And I mean, literally, they're enslaved on this island.
Except Jim Jones was a lot more abusive about it than, you know, saying nice things. Yeah. He tended towards
more lunacy and
more, yeah, you know,
drug abuse.
Yeah.
But perhaps cocaine-filled
tirades.
Perhaps he didn't start out. Maybe he didn't lead with that when they first got there.
Yeah,
you know. But anyway, this voice, who is, by the way, just referred to as the leader. We don't get a name otherwise for this individual. We will see him, but says it is time to go to work. And from there, we pull up on Jubilee, Storm, and Gambit, who are among the captives. And this includes a shitload of cameos.
I was wondering who all this was and if you could name all these characters.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'll go ahead and run through, because some of them, I mean, play more than, I would say, just a cameo role in this episode. But, I mean, right off the bat, we see Pyro, Mystique, Richter, Feral, Avalanche is going to be coming up in just a couple of scenes. Thunderbird is in there. Caliban gets a quick shot.
Which one was Mystique? I guess
Mystique
I missed her.
She is really just in that first scene where they everybody wakes up and they're being escorted out of their cells. First you see Pyro and Mystique is like right behind him.
Oh, okay.
And she doesn't really make any other contribution to the Pyro doesn't either, nor does Avalanche. But later we're going to see Blob, who does have at least a speaking part. Mm-hmm. We see Sunfire, who has a bit more involvement. The twin Canadian mutants, Northstar and Aurora of Alpha Flight, are here for some reason.
Oh, we got some Alpha Flight. I like
we got
that.
Some Alpha Flight, yeah, already in this show. And Domino is even seen briefly.
Oh, I like Domino. Point.
So, yeah, those are all your at least named mutants. There are a few, like, from what I understand, they were just kind of drawn in, like, meant to be temporary characters inserted as stand-ins because they hadn't quite decided who should this character be yet, but they
right.
they aren't anyone from the comics, basically.
Okay.
But yeah, these are the characters who actually are distinctly recognizable. So anyway.
I have a question. Why do they have costumes?
Yeah, that's a good point. They are, I mean, they are kind of wearing their comics costumes, right? Which makes you wonder, is this how they were captured?
I did wonder that.
I think it's kind of just a byproduct of the series that says, hey, let's just make sure these characters look like they do in the comics, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. It just bugged me.
And also because they're going to, I mean, pretty much all of these guys are going to show up in a more significant capacity later on, and they probably just want a consistent character model for animation.
Okay. That makes sense.
That would be my guess. Like, because Mystique, Pyro, Avalanche, Blob, all of them are going to be more prominent characters later in this very season. I mean, Domino, we don't really see again, but she's in like one frame. Feral, we don't really see again. But again, I think those are just, hey, if we're going to use these characters, let's just establish what the character models are going to be for our animators, I guess. Funny enough, though, the character Richter, who, again, not somebody who does a whole lot in this episode, he kind of, visually, he kind of looks like Gambit. He's in just sort of a jumpsuit. Mm-hmm. And that is not his proper costume at all. It's actually what he wore when he was in the comics captured and played a role in a storyline in Genosha.
That's an interesting little tidbit.
Yeah, he was a member of the New Mutants, and the Genoshians like kidnapped a bunch of them, and basically they put them in these weird body suits. And that's what he was wearing for the duration of that story. So I don't know why they went with that look. I guess because it had a pre-existing connection to Genosha, already. Yeah. You know?
That makes sense.
So funny enough. But we learn quickly that these mutants are in fact enslaved. Their powers are being suppressed by these restraint collars, and it's said that they will explode if they're tampered with. If you try to remove your collar, it will explode and destroy you, Jenny.
Suicide Squad style.
Yeah, I guess so. Which, I mean, that might, you know, for some characters, that might be a preferable to their fate of being pressed into hard labor, which is what the Genosians are doing here. And they are told they can use their powers in service of their work, of course. But at all other times, they will be deactivated courtesy of these collars. But Storm is here. And
pretty smart. It is. It's Genosians to use mutants.
it's horrible, but it's one of those. It's, again, it's another spin on what this might look like, you know, in the real world, how humans would interact with mutants and how mutants might be, as a vulnerable population, treated as like a commodity, you know? Right. And this is, Genosha was meant as a allegory for apartheid South Africa when it was created, which, late 80s. Since then, it has stood in for various different things. It became more of a, after that, in the 90s, it was more of like a metaphor for a Middle Eastern conflict where you had different ethnic groups in conflict with one another. So Genosha is kind of whatever the comics need it to be historically,
right?
When you want to explore these different themes. But here in the show, it's kind of its original incarnation as this island where mutants are enslaved in service to a human, ruling class, basically. So Storm is not going to have any of this bullshit. She rallies her teammates into action immediately, attacks the Genosian guards. But Gambit, oddly enough, is holding back, and he actually prevents Jubilee from intervening on Storm's behalf as well. But before Storm can really make much headway, her collar is reactivated, and she just falls from the sky and sinks into the sea below, gets picked up by, once again, a Sentinel. Jubilee expresses surprise, which is weird because didn't she know that they got captured by Sentinel on the cliffhanger?
You remember how Sentinel was?
Maybe she was knocked out at that point. Anyway.
And Gambit says there's always more gators in the bayou.
Yeah. Gotta love that line. Always more gators in the bayou. So speaking of gators, we have Bolivar Trask making his return to the show. Sentinel creator tells the mutants that, again, the leader, no other name given, has promised that the mutants will be set free as soon as this dam that they are apparently working on is completed. So I guess, you know, when old Henry Peter Gyrick said that they were taking the operation overseas back in our opening two-parter, this is what he was referring to.
Hey, meant Genosha. What the fuck, man?
All right, and we're going to see him returning in this episode as well. Storm is going to be disposed of, and she's just going to be killed for her insurgents here. But Gambit does jump in at this point, and he reveals that she could be a great asset to the Genosians with her ability to control the weather. So he's pleading on her behalf, basically, let her live, but making it sound like, you know, it's really to your benefit that you keep her around. Unfortunately, though, for her, that means getting tossed into this tiny little locker, which I suppose is the Genosian equivalent to solitary confinement. Really, you got to figure it's a special kind of hell, given Storm and her claustrophobia. So I don't like that at all. Pretty uncomfortable. But then Gambit seems like, you know, we're back to work now. Gambit is going to make his move, whatever he has in mind. We're not going to see how that plays out because there is an explosion in the distance that really seems to spook the guards, puts them on high alert, and the mutants are pretty abruptly sent back to their cells. We'll find out what this is a little later in the episode. But first, we got to go back to the mansion, Jenny, where Cyclops can't get through to Genosha by phone. Just all static. Jean is there. She offhandedly mentions Storm's resourcefulness, having grown up as a girl on the streets of Cairo, which, you know, just saying she's pretty... you know,
she can handle
this is nothing for her. She can handle it. Yeah, exactly. So she's not especially alarmed by this, just thinking, well, maybe they don't have the best infrastructure there. Doesn't necessarily mean anything suspicious is afoot.
Also, then, Cyclops has a red phone as well. So it looks like if you follow along, that the X-Men are the bad guys.
Yeah, it kind of
or
does.
Cyclops in particular, because he was on that phone.
God, that's so funny. It's like the animation studio must, like, some way they just want to code a red phone as like, ooh. You know,
I think it works. I think that I've learned that the red phone is bad. Only bad news.
Code for something. Yeah. Wolverine now makes his return. But he doesn't say anything about his own little adventure other than that he was someplace cold and kind of seems to have picked up a cold.
Yeah, sniffled a little bit.
Not quite sure. I mean, he does have a healing factor. Doesn't mean he can't get sick, but this might be the extent of that cold. Like, yeah, just a few sniffles and he's done. He's good. You and I would be sick in bed for a week.
Yeah, probably.
So getting back to Genosha, there is a sudden power loss, and that allows Jubilee to pick the lock to her cell. She then is going to free Gambit as well and basically recruit him in this little escape plan. But he's not really having it. He's just sort of blowing her off, saying, no, why don't you try your luck with the others? They like you better anyway. So he's sort of just doing his own thing. So Jubilee has to return to her cell after trying to enlist the other prisoners. They are not having it either. Basically tell her to go fuck herself. The power is coming back on, so she can't really make any headway with them. So it's like, why is the power mysteriously shutting off? We'll learn the answer to that question as well coming up. Now, at this point, Cyclops is like, all right, we got to see what's going on. Can't get through to anybody. Let's go check it out. Professor X says he will not be joining them. He's got other things to attend to. So doesn't seem particularly alarmed by this either. I mean, Cyclops is like the only person, again, to his credit, having a stick up his ass. At least he's a little bit. Like, maybe there's trouble afoot here. Everybody else is like, yeah, just let them enjoy the beach, right? But as we pull away, we see the professor dialing up. I don't think he had a red phone, though.
No.
He's calling up on his computer, the Muir Island Mutant Research Center, Jenny.
Oh, boy.
So, I don't know what's going on, but that's his business. And we'll have to find out what that's about.
Was that nefarious?
A few episodes from now. We're going to have to put a pin in that one for a minute.
A mutant research center doesn't really sound that great.
Sounds a bit ominous, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what? Yeah, I don't know. What could he have going on there? But in any case, in Genosha, the prisoners are being marched back to work, and now all of a sudden it's like, hey, Jubilee, we're on board with your plan. Sunfire saying, you know, just say the word and we're with you. Gambit, however, is nowhere to be found, but Jubilee wastes no time. She rushes the guard, gives him a sweet shin music, and steals the remote control for the restraining collars. So they're activated and deactivated remotely with this device, but it's not working. What the hell? I thought I had this all figured out. So the Sentinels very quickly stamp out this little rebellion, and the Genosians reveal that somebody dropped the dime on the mutants. And who was that? We're going to find out here shortly. But Jubilee now is going to be confined in a locker right next to Storm. Storm is delirious.
Yeah, she's not doing too well locked in this thing.
Yeah, she's in rough shape. And this, I had a very visceral reaction to this scene, honestly. Like,
really?
Yeah, I think it's just, I have a lot of attachment. Just Storm is one of my favorite characters within this team. And just because she's so powerful, seeing her like in such a vulnerable position, and like they don't even know how horrible this is for her personally on account of her claustrophobia. It's like, it's so cruel and dismissive. And I just want her to murder everyone. Like,
yes.
Fuck, drown them all. Yes, please. So, elsewhere on Genosha, Trask is showing off his latest creation to Henry Peter Gyrick, who apparently has joined the party, and that is Master Mold. Master Mold, I think.
Explain what Master Mold does, Tim.
Sure. Yeah. So Master Mold is best described as a giant sentinel who poops out regular size sentinels.
Out of his chest.
Out of his chest, yeah. Although he is in a seated position much of the time.
Mm-hmm. He is.
He just sort of sits around and poops out other Sentinels. So amazing. It's kind of like,
it's amazing, yeah. Visual. Like, it's crazy.
Really is.
I can't imagine what little kids would think about. I don't even remember what I thought about it, but
yeah, I think I thought it was pretty great because right? It's sort of an unlimited supply of Sentinels now. It's just, it's like you've got this one huge Sentinel that's a walking Sentinel factory, and that it basically solves the manufacturing bottleneck that Trask had and that Gyrick was complaining about in those earlier episodes, right? You're building them too slowly. And well, now, shit, you have 100 Sentinels in a day. But Master Mold does have some significant power requirements. It just eats up a lot of energy. So this is why... This is why they're having these blackouts on the island. It's Master Mold just eating up too much of the power grid, I guess. It's like that scene in Christmas Vacation when the lights finally work. Power company has to dip into the auxiliary power, whatever. So that's still an issue, but at least they don't have the supply constraints with the Sentinel creation that they used to. And now, Trask is sort of feeling himself. He says he allowed this incursion to take place with these mutants, the breakout, because he wanted to shatter their spirit, and especially by revealing the source of his intel to be none other than Gambit. Oh my God.
What
a heartbreaker. Yep. And now Gyrick is interrogating Gambit. He says that the X-Men aren't his friends, that they're just using him, and he's got no more loyalty to the X-Men than he does to the Genosians. So he's just kind of out for himself. Gyrick thinks that could be beneficial, to their cause. So he's going to be escorted somewhere. We aren't really told where. But he does manage to escape his captors. And at this point, Gambit comes face to face with the guy who is responsible for all these little dust ups in the area.
Oh boy.
And that is none other than a real badass with a big fucking gun.
Yes, sir.
Named Cable. And, Cable, by the way, introduces himself only as the Wild Man of Borneo.
I love that. That popped me.
Which is really funny. Great voice actor as well for this.
Oh,
Cable.
Yeah. He kills
He's like so deadpan and so just got that deep voice.
Yeah.
He's great. He's got a great little musical accompaniment too, where it sounds a little, futuristic. I don't know how else to describe it. A little Terminator-esque. But we're not going to find out too much about Cable here. It's one of those deals where he was such an enigmatic character in the comics, especially at the time this episode would have been written, that they almost have to deliberately keep it really vague in terms of, okay, who is he? What's his backstory? What's his deal? We're going to get a little of that, but there's not much, right? It's just, he's cool. He's got cool guns and is, maybe a mutant. We're not even sure. Maybe a cyborg. We're not really sure about that, but it's Cable and he fucks, right?
Yes, he does. And he helps, Gambit. And
kind of very helpful. Yeah. Well, Gambit helps him. Yeah. Gambit helps him by pointing Cable in the right direction. Cable's looking for the leader. Has beef with this guy. And so in exchange, Cable gives Gambit like a key basically to the restraining collars, and it works. Gambit is able to remove his collar with that key and takes off on his own. So we get like a little voiceover here from none other than a returning Cameron Hodge. Jenny, do you remember this guy? He was actually a Beast's pretty ineffectual lawyer.
Yes, that's right.
third episode. Yep. So Hodge is now he describes himself as a development advisor to the government of Genosha. So I guess he has fully turned heel, or was always a heel. He's not with the mutants at all. And he's telling Gyrick that Cable was this former mercenary in the leader's army. But he turned against the leader when he learned that, and this is a quote because I don't know how else to describe it. When he learned that the leader wasn't the champion of democracy he claimed to be. And he says they suspect Cable's a mutant, but they aren't really sure. So, I mean, that's the extent of the backstory we get here for Cable. He's got beef with this guy who is now known as the leader, used to be known as just a colonel. So I guess he was some kind of, you know, like military leader. And maybe there was a coup, but it's all just purposely vague. He looks
like a cult leader.
He looks like a cult leader. Yeah, it's a lot going on.
Dr. Strange, so now, looking motherfucker.
Well, and he's got the powdered wig.
Yeah, he got some crazy wig. It's nuts.
Very colonial looking 17th century kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, judicial figure. I don't know.
Vampire or something.
Yeah, he's very Interview with the Vampire, right? And the leader, as far as I could tell, is not anybody from the comics. It's just
I was going to ask that too.
Yeah, that's the weird thing about this. He's just kind of a generic, unnamed leader, as you will, of Genosha. So that's pretty much his only purpose and role in this episode. But Gambit has now shown his true colors. He busts Jubilee and Storm loose from their solitary confinement lockers. And again, a meeting of the minds here in Genosha. The leader is explaining that the restraining collars were invented by a scientist in Scotland. So, at least a little backstory there as well. Gyrick is very interested in this and wants to purchase them in bulk. what an asshole.
Yeah.
But I mean, Cable is now basically sniping them from a distance. So while he keeps those assholes occupied, the trio of X-Men manage to free their fellow mutants and they start wrecking shop on these Genosians. For his part, Gyrick has seen enough now. He is going to head back to Washington. Pretty funny how first it's like, oh, the president shut us down. I'm taking the operation overseas. And like,
right.
It doesn't seem like they've been at it for this long. Now he's like, this whole thing is going tits up. I'm going back to Washington. So, but anyway, Storm, despite her weakened state, she is whipping up just like this massive monsoon. And that is going to destroy the dam that they have been building. Hopefully take Master Mold with it. Mm-hmm. But she's nearly brought down by her own efforts. Again, she's still quite weakened. But if not for the timely intervention of Rogue, who flies in, catches Storm as she is once again falling from the sky. Meanwhile, the leader and Cameron Hodge are being halted in their escape by Cable. He blows up their car almost with them in it. I wish he had.
I know, me too.
Would have spared us a lot of grief later on. Cable grabs up the leader and Hodge is about to open fire on him, only for all three to be battered by this, like, I don't know how to describe it, but it's tsunami wave as Cable merely laughs, which is a very, I don't know, it just seems very fitting of his character. As little as we've gotten to know him, just to be swept up by this wave. It's just such a cosmically fitting fate, I guess, for all of them. The Sentinels are likewise taken by this tidal wave. Master Mold makes a great showing here by getting up and remarking, I am still plugged in.
Oh my God, I fucking died. I died when he said that. And like, and the sure animation enough, was so fucking funny too. Like, yes, he looked behind him and his fucking foot was plugged in and shit. Oh my God. I wrote it down. That shit was so funny.
So he's stuck. He's still plugged in. Can't escape.
Still plugged in. Just so stupid.
It's so
You're
stupid,
a giant machine that makes other giant robot, machines.
Yes.
And you are plugged into the fucking wall.
Yeah,
no.
He's just fucking plugged into the wall. Yeah. They said he has, look, he has such considerable power requirements. This is like the best they could come up with.
They made one plug. That's what they made.
They made one plug.
One plug.
Oh my God. I mean, I guess it's better than multiple plugs. He would have been like, I am plugged in from all angles, you know. So we've got everybody.
Powerful cord. A lot of
yeah.
Electricity.
I don't think that Big Fish would have gotten far even if he wasn't plugged in, but it is what it is. Good on Storm though. Fuck all these assholes.
She had a great scene. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's one of those very dramatic calling down the elements kind of scenes that she is known for with her speechifying. But everybody's now packed safely aboard the Blackbird. Jubilee apologizes to Gambit for thinking he could ever betray the team. That could be considered a bit of foreshadowing.
A little bit.
Based on what's going to be coming up later in this season. But as the team returns home, Jenny, they are shocked to find that the school is in ruins. What the hell? To be continued.
Another to be continued.
To be continued yet again.
Damn.
You want to know what's funny, though? Fun fact. Maybe fun. I don't know. You tell me. As this episode originally aired, it was not a to be continued because the team ended up returning safe and sound. No evidence of a destroyed mansion or anything. It's just, you know, they live to fight another day and that's that. Happy ending. Which was accomplished through some pretty hastily inserted footage. Because what had happened was the immediate follow-up to this episode wasn't going to be ready to air for like a few more weeks. But they did have the two Apocalypse-centered episodes that were going to air after that ready to go. Like, those were fully animated. They could put those on, so that's what they do. They make it look like everything's fine at the end of this.
The next
episode they show is actually The Cure, and then they do the follow-up to that, which is Come the Apocalypse. And then finally, once the animation was finished, they show the Juggernaut episode. This was in the first run airing. So we never got to see that wrecked mansion we didn't know that anything happened to that mansion until basically they showed the Juggernaut episode, and it's like, why are they fixing things? Why is everything all busted up? What the hell happened? Did I miss an episode? No, just shit aired out of order, and they also made it look like, you know, they didn't screw up. So yeah, they got a little creative here the first go around. I mean, in subsequent airings of these, they're shown in the intended order. Like, that was the only time that it ever been shown that way in that sequence was back in 1993, which I only know because I remember it happening. I was watching it at the time and was sort of confused by all that.
Well, your sound kind of cut out there for a minute, so I missed the end of that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I was just saying the only reason I know any of that is I was watching it at the time as it aired in 1993 and found it confusing because they've never aired it in that sequence in any subsequent
that's
rebroadcast.
Amazing.
Yeah, they've always put it back in its intended sequence, I guess. So, and that's how we will be covering it. Our next episode will be the Unstoppable Juggernaut, which airs actually several weeks after this one, but so be it. We're gonna do them in the intended order, Jenny.
Yes, we are. I like that about us. I like this episode. I thought it was a lot of different concepts. You got like the Sentinel maker, the Mama Sentinel, and
Mama Mold,
and you get a lot of good Storm stuff in this episode, and some of the political stuff that's kind of going on in the background with how the government is seeing mutants now. So, yeah, I thought this was a very interesting episode.
Yeah, I mean, heavy subject matter.
We're talking about
full-on slavery.
Mutant
slavery, and this children's cartoon. Again, I found myself having that surprising reaction, particularly to Storm's mistreatment. And it definitely packs a punch, and probably more so as I've gotten older than maybe when I was a kid watching this and just sort of taking it, you know, on its own terms. Now that I see kind of what they were going for and sort of the themes involved and how it connects to other, you know, real world and real life tragedies and politics, I'm like, ooh, yeah, wow. It's a lot for a 22 minute installment of a Saturday morning cartoon. I think if anything, you probably could have gotten away with breaking this one up into two parts. Mm-hmm. It feels a bit rushed. If I had any criticisms, maybe you could end off with that Gambit tease, you know, betraying the team as a cliffhanger to your first part.
Oh, yeah, that'd be a good spot for it.
You know what I mean? And then get into like the Cable stuff in a part two, and you know, give this finale a little bit more breathing room where Storm gets to really strut her stuff. And I want to say that the comics adaptation of this episode in that series we mentioned, I think we've talked about X-Men Adventures, I believe it did break this up into two comics. So, you know, there is a case to be made for maybe the show doing that as well, but it is what it is.
Right.
I still think it's pretty strong. Stands up on its own. This is a pretty solid outing. We didn't do great. Well, let's do grades now for, let's go back to Cold Vengeance.
Cold Vengeance.
I would give that a 2.5.
Oh, you went low.
Yeah.
A little bit. 2.5.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to do a 3.5 on that episode.
Okay. Like you're much higher on it.
Are we doing halves, though? I thought we weren't.
We can. Yeah. I don't always, but I felt like splitting the difference with them.
Yeah. 3.5 X's.
Okay. And so what are you going to do for Slave Island?
I'm going to do 4 X's on that one.
4. Okay. I'm going to go. See, here's where I'm going to go. 3.5.
Okay.
Again, I think if we had gotten just better pacing, or maybe this was a two-parter, it could have really shined. Mm-hmm. But it feels like I won't say a missed opportunity, but they could have done a lot more with this setup. You know what I mean?
I agree.
So, anyway, that is not the last we will see of Cable, nor Cameron Hodge, nor Master Mold, even, if you can believe it.
Oh,
Jenny.
Really?
But, yeah.
Mama Mold. Be back
Mama
again.
Mama Mold. That's right. Oh, so what else we got going on here? So, in terms of, like, connections to the comics, there's really no direct comics adaptations for the episode Cold Vengeance. That's kind of its own original story. For Slave Island, I'd say a pretty loose adaptation of the first appearance of Genosha, which was in Uncanny X-Men 235 through 238. Those were in 1988. Again, Genosha, the way it works is a bit different in the comics, but I mean, I would say this is a faithful interpretation of it.
Okay, good.
And, you know, as far as characters appearing in these episodes, we had, really, in both episodes, pretty consistent. Professor X, Cyclops, Jean Grey, Wolverine, Storm, Gambit, and Jubilee, and Rogue, if I didn't mention Rogue. Although I don't think Rogue was in Cold Vengeance at
maybe
all.
Maybe just at the very beginning?
Yeah, or maybe in the background while everybody's arguing.
Yeah.
I don't know if she was in that war room or not. Anyway. And our villains, we had basically Sabretooth and the Genosian Magistrates in Cold Vengeance and Slave Island. We had kind of a slew of villains. We had, once again, Genosian Magistrates. We had Cameron Hodge. We had Henry Peter Gyrick returning along with Bolivar Trask and the Sentinels and the debuting Master Mold. A lot going on there. Supporting characters, I just put down Cable, whereas everybody else we mentioned Pyro, Mystique, Richter, Feral, Avalanche, Warpath, Caliban, Blob, Sunfire, Northstar, Aurora. That's easy for me to say.
I know.
And Domino, I just put down as cameos, again, for Slave Island.
I'm glad that you got all of them and mentioned them, because I was wondering if you would.
Yeah, and again, we'll see about half of those in a more fleshed out form later on in the show. Others kind of one and done, so it is what it is. On the comic stands at this time, Jenny, you would find Wolverine, issue 68. Uncanny X-Men, issue 299, one issue away from a big 300 anniversary, right? Magneto number zero. So what's a Magneto number zero? It was a one-shot. It was a reprint of a bunch of, like, older, a little bit more obscure Magneto appearances from back in the day. Some good stories, like, covering his origin that would have been out of print for a long time at this point. They're gearing up for a big Magneto return in the comics at this point.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. Big crossover event called Fatal Attractions is on the horizon here. And lastly, we had X-Men Adventures, the comic series that adapts the cartoon that adapts the comics. Was on issue 6, and sure enough, issue 6 is an adaptation of Cold Vengeance.
Cold Vengeance. All right. So, well, I love that. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Quite circular there.
Well, and you have done a fantastic job getting us through these episodes. I appreciate you and all the hard work you did.
Well, I have a fantastic partner. So, yeah, even with just the two of us here, we get it done.
Yeah, we do.
And with style, Petit. With style.
How many episodes we got coming up on the next? How many are we watching?
So I feel like we've reshuffled things a little bit. So our next outing, again, because we are going to go in the intended script order, and the way that these typically air, will be the Unstoppable Juggernaut. That's going to be its own thing, just kind of because it has to be. And then after that, we will cover what I referred to as the Apocalypse two-parter, which is The Cure and Come the Apocalypse as its own thing, followed by Days of Future Past, parts 1 and 2, and then the season finale, which is called The Final Decision. That will be its own episode, and that'll be it for this first season.
Wow.
Of X-Men the Animated Series on our podcast. And yeah, that's what folks can look forward to in the coming weeks.
Love that.
Of course, we won't be done. We'll move into that second season. We've got more movies to cover as well. It's a lot going on here on Exposition.
Where you get excited about our X-Men days. At least I do.
And I do too.
Hopefully we can bring them a little bit more frequently, because we do get complaints about that.
we have gotten complaints. Yes, our complaint is that the show takes an eternity to come out, apparently. Which, honestly, it's not like this show is difficult in terms of prep, at least for me.
Oh, definitely not.
So, I mean, yeah, no reason we can't do it with a little more frequency, as far as I'm concerned.
We will try to do that. All right. What do you have as far as other podcasts to promote?
Oh, hell, I don't know. Let's see. We've got, another retrospective 90s podcast that I do, and it's called 9021 NoSo. That is an affiliate of the North-South Connection, but it's a Beverly Hills 90210 retrospective with myself and JT Rosero. We've been at that show for a minute, Jenny. You've been on it for many, many outings.
I think I'm the one with the most.
I believe you're up to 5 appearances now as a guest. So you're in our Grand Slam club because we go to 5. Yeah. And we'll have you on for a lot more, no doubt, because we are into that third season now of Beverly Hills 90210. That is the senior year. We've kind of just gotten started. We're in those summer months with the beach club. Brenda and Donna's adventures in Paris. We're going to get some Dean Cain action with Reek.
Yes.
And Dylan and Kelly are heating up. Exciting times on 9021 NoSo. So if you're a fan of that series, look for it on your preferred podcatcher app. Subscribe and check us out. So we will have Jenny on the Place Me Nation Wrestling Podcast Network, an episode of Talking WCW. Which
will we though?
Well, we have. Look, I should say we are scheduled to record.
We are scheduled to record that, yes.
An episode of that podcast that, in theory, we do.
Yes.
So, assuming we do record that, I am always hesitant to promote a podcast we haven't actually recorded yet, even if we are scheduled to record it. Assuming we do get that recorded, you'll have that to look forward to. It's called Talking WCW. It's a WCW podcast. What more do you want to know? But that's on Place to Be Nation Wrestling. So assuming that does come out, and you're a WCW fan, I'm sure it will be a real treat, Jenny.
I'm sure it will be.
Because we always have fun on that show. We do.
That's a great show. Everybody loves that show. We always drag out these promos too, but anyway, I did want to talk real quick about, for you comics fans, I have a new comic books related show. It is called the Avengers Initiative,
and Avengers.
Avengers.
Okay.
I didn't put the right emphasis.
No, you did. I just wanted to make sure I heard it correctly, that it's Avengers.
And it goes through the characters and the stories of the female characters and stories of the MCU. Mm-hmm. So, that show can be found on the Kings of Sport Patreon and is co-hosted by my friend Nate Milton and Brittany Monet. And, we have one episode out right now. You can hear it for free. And then the rest of those episodes going forward, will be on the Patreon. So look that up and give it a listen. Our first episode, we listed our top 5 favorites of the MCU. 5 favorite ladies, I should say, as this is a ladies-focused podcast. So that's what we did. And check it out. We also have merch for that show. Chop Tees is where you can find that. We have a couple different logos, a couple different styles, hoodies, t-shirts, whatever. So buy one of those if you feel like it, supporting the show. As for me, you can find me also here every Wednesday on North South Connection with this show, GC Dub, a game changing podcast, Talking Docs, some other fun things I have thinking about doing recently. So, anything I do, you can find on my Twitter. It'll be at Jenny Position as far as that and all the other socials as well. So anyway, yes. Got that all done out of the way, and we appreciate you guys listening, and we will see you next time.
Bye-bye.